Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here with Jason Pat. Jason, I can't believe I'm saying this, but the Bulls made three or four really sharp moves to start off free agency.
How about it? We're negative a lot on this podcast. We're going to be pretty positive here with, as you mentioned, the Bulls doing some really good things in free agency. I know when we did our free agency preview, we basically kind of just said, don't really expect too much. Hopefully they'll just make some moves. I don't want to say on the margins. Basically add some role players. Try to give the team more depth. Give them a more air of respectability as they try to move forward in this rebuild. And that's basically what they've done. They started right away, right when free agency opened. They agreed to a deal with Thaddeus Young. 3 years, $41 million. Was with the Pacers last year. That third year's got some type of guarantee on it. We're not totally sure what it is yet, but I know a lot of people are talking about 2021 and keeping flexibility for that summer. I'm not even that worried about that yet, but whatever. The partial guarantee on that third year, it seems like. And then they go and do a sign-and-trade deal. Tomas Satoransky from the Wizards. The Bulls apparently just like kind of pilfering from the Wizards these days. So he's going to be reuniting with Otto Porter Jr. That's 3 years, $30 million. Once again, partial guarantee on the third year. Not sure what that is yet. Point guards, shooting guards, small forward, really just solid kind of a versatile guard. And then they re-signed Ryan Arcidiacono, 3 years, $9 million. They used the early bird rights to re-sign him. And the last deal that they just did was Luke Kornet, was a big man. They'll be the backup center from the New York Knicks. I know he torched the Bulls in one of the games at the end of the year when the Bulls and Knicks were both tankathons. I think he had a career high, like 24 points. Guy basically just chucks threes and is a decent shot blocker, but basically just filling out their whole roster. They got a great third big man in Thad Young. They got possibly their starting point guard in Satoransky. Bringing back Arcidiacono to be what, third, fourth point guard. We'll talk about Chris Dunn later. And then Kornet, backup big man. We'll see what happens with Daniel Gafford. I would guess Kornet might be the backup center. Felicio is probably out of the picture. Who knows what will happen there, but we'll see that. They've kind of just added all across the roster. I feel like they could still use another wing. The roster is almost full at this point, but again, they move Chris Dunn. They might still have the room exception. I'm not totally sure how they signed Kornet, if he used any of that, but just four just real solid deals, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you look at what the Bulls did in free agency, this almost feels like realistically the best case scenario to me. And it feels like a totally different change of approach from what we've seen the Bulls do over the last 5 or 10 years. I think, you know, what free agency has been defined by for the Bulls during this decade has been chasing big names who put up empty stats. It's like the only stat the Bulls looked at heading into free agency for this entire decade was points per game. Most of the rumors that were coming out ahead of free agency were they were interested in guys like Enes Kanter. They were interested in Julius Randle. And that really worried me, but I totally believed it because that seemed in line with what the Bulls, how the Bulls typically handle free agency. And then they come out with clearly like moves that they identified in the future. They get Thad Young done right away. They target Satoransky. That's done the next day. So I think that the Bulls came out and made some really sharp moves to improve the team. In Thad Young, you have a third big man who can play with either Carter or Markkanen. In Satoransky, you have a new starting point guard, a guy who I think will be fine being the fifth option on offense, which is really going to be a big difference between him and Chris Dunn, because Dunn, while he could get hot offensively and he had a lot of ability on defense, to me, when he got his offense cooking, it was usually coming at the expense of the team. So to have someone like Satoransky, his usage rate was 6 or 7 points less than Dunn's was, and his true shooting percentage was like more than 10 points higher. Satoransky had 60% or 59% true shooting percentage. Chris Dunn was only at like 48% last year. So he's an efficient scorer, but he's someone who doesn't take a lot of shots or turn the ball over a lot. He was top 20 in the NBA this past season, assist to turnover ratio. I love his size and versatility in the backcourt. At 6'7", you could play the one or the two. Maybe you even put him in some three-guard lineups. So, you know, that's the thing that really jumps out to me about this free agency, Jason, is first of all, just how targeted all these signings were. The way, you know, they just came out and got it done. They didn't like wait till the end of free agency and try to go after a big name. They went after guys who, quite frankly, are analytics darlings. And that's never something we would expect to say about the Bulls in the past. And, you know, I really think that now, it's going to be a conversation we're going to be having from this point on. Like, can the Bulls make the playoffs? And, you know, we'll save that talk maybe for the end of this podcast. But that is how much they improved the team, I think, with the four signings they've made so far in free agency.
Yeah, let's just kind of go through. Obviously, you talked a bit about Saransky. Let's kind of just go through each guy individually. So we'll start right away. Thad Young. I wrote an article for him about him for Forbes. Just a quick little write up on the signing. He actually had like one of the best seasons of his career last year. If you just go through and look some of the numbers, not like overall numbers. Like he averaged 12.6 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.5 steals. But if you look, it's just he shot. He was really efficient, 52.7% shooting overall. He's not the greatest 3-point shooter, but 35% on two attempts a game. That's not bad. If you go and look at some of the just like the advanced numbers for him, they were some of the best of his career. Let me pull them up right here. Yeah, so like his best VORP, the value over replacement player, tops of his career. His box plus minus, tops of his career last year. His win shares were second best of his career. True shooting percentage was almost 57%. So like, and basically a lot of these numbers, he had a great season as a member of the Pacers. He was their starting power forward. That the Pacers won, what was it, 48 games last year, and that was despite Oladipo missing a good chunk of the season. And just as a third big, like, I mean, that's fantastic. And like the last couple of years, like, we've seen the Bulls backup power forwards, it's been like Bobby Portis, Jabari Parker, dudes who can get buckets but just can't really, they're just awful defenders. Portis is an absolutely terrible big defender. We've clowned Jabari enough for his defense. Thad Young is a guy who's going to come out and play some defense. The 1.5 steals per game, steals don't always mean everything, but he has consistently been a guy who's made plays on the defensive end. I think there was a stat, I think Stefan Noh looked up, where he was one of the league leaders in like loose balls recovered per game. I mean, so just that kind of stuff, forcing steals, playing both ends, hustle, work ethic. I know the guys, the Pacers guys, just basically lauded him. I know Kevin Pritchard, the Pacers president, came out and had some nice words from him on Twitter. Just how they're really gonna miss him. Just, I mean, just sounds like a Jim Boylan guy. Just, he's a hard nosed guy, great work ethic. He'll bring that veteran leadership and he'll play hard on both ends. So, like, I mean, that's exactly, I feel like, what they needed in the front court, especially with a couple young guys in Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. They've lost Robin Lopez. He's going to play with Brooke Lopez and the Bucks, which would be awesome, by the way. But now that they lost that veteran presence, they bring one right in with Thaddeus Young. I feel like the deal is fair. It's $14 million a year for a really good third big man who's basically just, I think he's 31, 32 years old. He should have a few good years left in him. So, yeah, and the Bulls struck right away on that one. They clearly targeted him right away. And I wouldn't surprise me if this might have been a little Doug Collins action, because I believe Thad played for Doug Collins in Philadelphia. So is this like Doug Collins actually making his mark here? Either way, real solid signing, I think.
Yeah, I've got some thoughts just on the decision-making process in the front office, I'll say, for a little bit later in this podcast. But in terms of Thad Young, what I really like about him right away is that he can play with Carter or Markkanen. He can play with Carter because last year he was able to stretch it out a little bit with his three-point shot. I think he hit 35% of his threes.
Yep.
He was taking more than he really ever has before in his career. So I like that he has like developed the outside touch, which obviously is an essential part for a power forward. But really, Thad Young is good because he's just so strong. He's just going to bull rush you, going left pretty much every time. But soft touch around the rim, I think that, you know, he has that combination of power and finesse that the Bulls really need at the four, and that's going to be able to pair well with Carter and Markkanen, because in lineups with Markkanen, you know, small ball looks, basically Lowry at the five. I think having a guy like Thad, who's a really good rebounder, who's a super smart defensive player, is going to allow those looks to prosper. So the Bulls now give themselves a lot of different options in the front court. People don't realize how good Thaddeus Young is defensively. He was probably the second best defensive player on the third best defensive team in the NBA last year. The Pacers finished number 3 in defensive efficiency, Miles Turner, probably the Pacers defensive player, just because.
Yeah, he was like a defensive player of the year candidate, I think Miles Turner was, so definitely. But yeah, I mean, Thad, very good for sure.
Yeah, but Thaddeus Young was the glue that held that defense together. So I think defensively, you know, if you want to grade him, he's like, you know, either probably an A minus or B plus defensively. And then on offense, he's like a B minus or a B. So it's a rare instance of the Bulls actually identifying a two-way player, actually identifying a guy who could give him some lineup versatility. And I just think that Thad Young's defensive ability and his and the way he can replace some of the post scoring they lost with Robin Lopez and be able to stretch it out a little bit. Smart player, skilled player, love the signing for the Bulls.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we move on to Tomas Satoransky. Obviously, you talked some of the numbers about him before. 6'7". He started 54 games for John Wall last year after he got hurt at point guard. I feel like the Wizards kind of seems like they didn't really use him right. It seems like I'm surprised that they let him go, to be honest. Like, they went out and they got Ish, like, Wall's still out. He might miss the whole year. And then they went out and got Ish Smith and Isaiah Thomas. Like, I mean, the Wizards are just kind of a hot mess in general. They haven't given the Tommy Shepard, whatever his name is, like the full-time job. I was surprised they let him go. It seems like they just kind of misused him in general there the last couple of years. When he got an opportunity, again, with Wall out as the starting point guard, just really solid both ends of the floor, really good shooter. And one of the things you mentioned was that he can be effective in that low usage role. His volume has never been that high, but the efficiency was there. Let me pull it up. A couple years ago, he shot like 45% from three. Oh, no, it was 47% from three. Only 1.4 attempts per game, but that's still really good. This past season, he was almost 40% from three on two attempts per game. And I know as a starter, he shot over 40% from three in those 40 games. 9 points, 5 assists, 3.5 rebounds. You mentioned the assist to turnover rate. He had one of the best assist to turnover rates in the entire league last season. I think he was in like the top 20 if you look at big minutes, guys. So just like, and you gotta get, he could play the one. It seems like he's gonna get a chance to possibly be the starting point guard. He could be a backup two, possibly a backup three if they want to play really small lineups. I think we had briefly mentioned him on our preview pod that I wasn't really sure if he was attainable. Clearly he was. And again, another really nice move. The Bulls did have to give up some draft capital to get him. I think some weird stuff with second round picks. I think one of the second rounders involved in like the Porter trade, like that's like 4 or 5 years down the line. Like, I think like protections were taken off. I think there was a swap in there, something else. Like, it's basically stuff just like whatever, three, four years down the line. The Bulls wanted their guy. They got him at a reasonable price. Again, $10 million a year for, he's 27 years old, for a possible starting point guard for at least maybe this year. We'll see, and then once Kobe White takes over, he can play multiple positions. He could be the backup one. He could be the backup two. Another just really solid signing there.
Yeah, to be able to get someone with that size, 6'7" point guard, immediately love that. Love his catch and shoot ability. He's someone who shot a high percentage because he doesn't take difficult looks. Basically, Thomas Satoransky's entire game is that he values making the right play over trying to look for his own numbers. He's someone who, as we said, is not going to be a guy who's like really beating you off the dribble in terms of penetration. I think in terms of guys who are going to be breaking down defenses off the dribble, it's basically going to be Zach LaVine for the Bulls. Hopefully Markkanen can develop it a little bit, and then, you know, we'll see what they can get on the bench out of Kobe, out of Denzel Valentine, some other guys. But Satoransky is really good just because he makes the right plays, a smart passer, doesn't turn it over, and awesome is a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. So I think to be able to get someone who's going to turn 28 at the onset of the season fits so well with this timeline. As you mentioned earlier, they also get some protection on that third year. So if the Bulls do want to try to become the new Nets and make the playoffs for the next 2 years in hopes of luring a superstar in 2021, I think that, you know, that's probably what the plan is going to be, and that's why they tried to give themselves some outs on these deals for Thaddeus Young and Satoransky. Really like the Satoransky move. Think it's going to be a huge upgrade over what the Bulls had at point guard last season. I think that it's nice that Kobe White will be able to develop slowly. He's only 19 years old. You don't want to throw him into the fire. Now Kobe White, you know, you play him in lineups with Satoransky where they're both sort of interchangeable in terms of who's the lead point guard. You can just do a lot of different things because of Satoransky's size and his catch and shoot ability. He's someone who I think for the first time in years, the Bulls have a point guard who makes his teammates better. They haven't had that since, you know, the peak of the Rondo year. But in general, Rondo was kind of a disaster that season. But especially in the playoff series against the Celtics and really towards the end of the year, I felt like he started cooking a little bit. But point guard has been such a bad position for the Bulls the last two seasons. They really, really improved the team with this signing.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting, just to bring up, it looked like the Bulls were actually, Casey said that the Bulls were actually going to probably sign Darren Collison, which is, I feel like I'm almost happier with Satoransky over Collison. Collison, and he retired out of nowhere to do his Jehovah's Witness thing, I guess, and to be with his family. Collison was a really solid player the last couple years. I know he did have some domestic violence issues, which would have been kind of thorny. He was a good shooter, veteran player, but I think I kind of like getting Satoransky instead. Like, I guess we don't know for sure if they actually would have signed Collison, but instead we get the Bulls get a younger player, a guy a little more versatile because of his size, could play all these different positions. I feel like I kind of like that better. And you look at Satoransky's 3-year, $30 million deal. You look at a guy like Corey Joseph, who got $337 from the Kings. Like, I feel like Satoransky is probably a better player. Joseph's a nice player. Another guy I thought the Bulls might look at. And the Bulls get a better deal, I feel like, on Satoransky than the Kings got on Corey Joseph. If we look at some of the other point guard deals that were out there, like George Hill basically got the same deal as Satoransky did. I'll take Satoransky at this point as well. Like, George Hill's getting up there in age. So, like, I feel like given, like, what was out there on the point guard market, some of the other guys we saw, Beverly got, $340 to stay with the Clippers. I'm not surprised that he ended up going back there. Like, I feel the Bulls got a really nice deal there for out of this point guard market.
Yeah, I'd rather have Satoransky than either of the two Pacers point guards last year, Darren Collison or Corey Joseph. I'd rather have him than Pat Bev, I think, just because he's younger. He's much taller. I think he gives you more lineup versatility. So just really a great move by the Bulls to bring in Satoransky. I'm surprised that the Wizards let him go for that contract number.
Get it.
But then again, the Wizards don't have a GM. The Bulls already totally ripped them off in the Otto Porter Jr. trade. Now they fleece them for Satoransky. Bulls, why stop now? Go get Bradley Beal.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what the Wizards, look at that Otto Porter trade. Like, they've already lost Portis, and it looks like Jabari's not coming back either. And Jabari, both guys actually did pretty well for them after that trade. So basically, it's like Otto Porter's kind of turned into like a salary dump. And I think Kelly Oubre Jr. has kind of done the same thing as well. I really have no idea what the Wizards are doing. But yeah, I guess another thing about Satoransky, and this also goes to Thad Young, is these are guys, knock on wood, have been pretty durable so far in their career. Like, Thad Young has played at least, I think it was like 73 games in 10 of his 12 NBA seasons. Satoransky played 80 games last year, 73 2 years ago. So these are guys who've been able to stay on the court, which is, I mean, some of that can just be luck, unlucky stuff. But the Bulls, we know, had a ton of problems with injuries the last couple of years. So to get a couple of guys who have so far been pretty durable in their NBA careers, also really nice.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, hopefully they can stay healthy because...
Yeah, just said, really knock on wood.
Undermine the Bulls last year in Thad Young, you get your third big man. In Satoransky, you get your starting point guard. You know, if you think the Bulls can even have like reasonable health this year, where Markkanen can play hopefully at least 70 games, where Carter can play 70 games, LaVine can play 70 games. I mean, the win total should be way higher than last year. Like, with these two signings in particular, Thad Young and Thomas Satoransky, I think the Bulls took themselves out of the cellar of the NBA. Now, there are a lot of teams that improved throughout the league. I think New Orleans improved a ton. They might be able to make the playoffs next year in Zion's rookie season. I look at what the Suns did. I mean, you add Rubio and Dario Saric. I kind of like that. I think that they're going to be a lot better just getting some adults in the room over there next to their young core. So pretty sharp moves by the Bulls, I think, in free agency, and totally changes the outlook of next year.
Yeah, moving on, we got Ryan Arcidiacono. We've talked a lot about him. I think we both said that we would like to possibly bring him back. I guess I'm surprised that they gave him 3 years, but I guess we'll see how that deal actually shakes out. 3 years, $9 million. It is cheap. I mean, $3 million for a real solid, probably third point guard. Arch was honestly probably one of the Bulls' more effective players last season. His true shooting percentage was up like 58, 59. Again, assist to turnover ratio, like we talked about how Satoransky's good at that. Arch was actually even better. I think he was up like even like top five, maybe top three in assist turnover ratio. We know he always hustles. The guy earned his contract. I really have no problem bringing him back as their guy. I mentioned that they basically used, they had early bird rights on him as a restricted free agent. So they were able to offer him this contract, 3 years, $9 million. I feel like it's totally fine. It makes perfect sense. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's really all I got. I'm not surprised that they brought him back. KC talked about how they really, really like him. I totally understand why. A guy who always shows up, plays hard. And yeah, I mean, just a real solid player. He's proved his worth as an NBA guy the last couple of years.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I want to note is that we did the free agency episode, the mock free agency episode last week, and the Bulls, what they actually did was way better than what we were suggesting on that podcast, I feel like.
Oh yeah.
So kudos to them for actually coming out and like signing guys who can meaningfully move the team forward towards the playoffs. I like Archie Diakono. I think that, you know, it's not totally guaranteed, I think, that he's going to be a legit NBA player, that he's going to be worth this contract. But he gives you some good depth there. Obviously, he's endeared himself to Boylan. I think that he's a good catch-and-shoot guy, doesn't turn it over, like you said. So I'm fine with Archie Diakono. And I think that, you know, now you're looking at the rest of the roster, and he's going to be, what, like their 10th man? Like, as a 10th or 11th man, I'm fine with Archie.
Yeah, you can do way worse as a, whatever, 12th, 11th, 12th man. I mean, it's, yeah, he was like, it was bad that, I mean, the Bulls were bad because they were playing him huge minutes, but if he's playing like emergency minutes or whatever, if they need him, they need a jolt, like, I feel like you can do way worse than Ryan Arcidiacono. I guess we should move on to Luke Kornet then. I don't know that much about Luke Kornet. I know that his dad played at Vanderbilt with Will Perdue. I know that he had a career-high game against the Bulls this past season at the end of the year. Again, I think he had like 24 points, was raining threes. Let me pull up a stats. He got up. He's basically a chucker. He played 17 minutes a game last year with the Knicks. He took four threes a game in like 17 minutes a game. So this guy gets up shots, shot 36%. He really can't shoot two-pointers. Like, his overall shooting percentage was 38%. Because he shot 41% on two-pointers. He's basically just a straight-up gunner. He did block almost a shot a game in those 17 minutes a game. So basically, as a backup center to spread the floor, if he's just like out there chucking threes, if you have Thad Young as your backup four, Luke Kornet as your backup five, chucking threes, like, I feel like that kind of that little bit of dichotomy there kind of works. The Bulls still do have Felicio. They do have Daniel Gafford. I'm assuming Gafford probably won't play too much this season, and Felicio, I mean, I would assume that they're trying to find a way to get him off the roster. They're not going to stretch his contract at this point. They'll maybe do that next season, get him off the roster. Maybe they'll be able to trade him as an expiring or sometime this upcoming this season. So I'm assuming that Young and then Kornet will be the main big guys off the bench. And I think they kind of work together. They got a tough guy in Young, and then they got this kind of a gunner and possible rim protector in Kornet. Like, I'm not going to say Luke Kornet is a great signing. I think it's totally fine. It seems like it's going to be probably pretty cheap. But, I mean, I like the idea of it, of adding a stretch big man off the bench.
Yeah, there's this guy, Jacob Goldstein, on Twitter, who's been assessing each free agent signing around the NBA in terms of how many wins are added. And I believe Kornet added more wins to the Bulls total than Satoransky.
Really?
Thaddeus Young.
Let me look that up.
Yeah, he was plus two wins, basically, 1.98. And that moves the Bulls in this Goldstein projection to 39 wins on the year, which is right about where they need to be to make the playoffs. So I think Kornet's interesting. I definitely remember him at Vanderbilt. He was just he's absolutely gigantic. He's 7'1". And he's going to shoot threes all the time. Like, our friend Mort tweeted a good stat that he was the only person with like over a 65% three-point rate and a 4% block rate, him and Brook Lopez. So basically, you're trying to find a proto-Brook Lopez, I think, with this signing. Someone who gives them a lot of size on the interior and can also stretch the floor and shoot threes. When they have him and Markkanen in there at the same time, I don't know if that's going to be tenable defensively whatsoever, but man, you would just have some wide open driving lanes for the guards at that point. I really like getting another shooter off the bench in the front court. I think that Kornet is really one of like the deep sleeper analytic darlings in this free agency class, and it just blows my mind. The Bulls were the team to identify him and to pick him up. Really good signing. Now, they obviously do have a lot of centers already. They have Felicio on the roster. They have Daniel Gafford. Well, I still think this was a great move because Gafford, I mean, he could spend the whole season in the G League. You never know He's still so young. Yeah. Second round pick, you can't really count on him to contribute it. Any type of reasonable production at the NBA level as a rookie. And then Felicio, it's like he has really dwindled in the last couple of years. Looks like a total lost cause at this point. He was pretty solid that 1-3 Alphas year when him and Dwayne Wade had some chemistry on the pick and roll, but his stock has just totally taken a hit. So to be able to get a fourth big man you could play also gives you some insurance. If Markkanen gets hurt again this year, to have another stretch big man in the rotation, really good signing, I think. Like, why not? You basically just get a 7-foot-1 guy who's going to jack a bunch of threes. He's slow. He might get you torched on defense, but you know, hopefully if he's playing with Wendell Carter, if he's playing with Thaddeus Young, you'll put another defensive-minded big next to him, cover him up a little bit, and then offensively he's going to open up a lot of driving lanes and be able to knock down some threes.
Yep, absolutely. Like I said, I don't know too much about him, but I mean, the fact that win total, I was really surprised to hear that. I had been actually following those. I think it was Jacob Goldstein. I had seen the first three. I did not see that Cornette one. So the fact that he was that high on that, pretty impressive. Now that they're up to 39 on those projections, that's pretty interesting. Before we talk about the big picture stuff, the rest of the roster, let's do a quick word from our sponsor. Let's talk about sleep. Listen to these studies from Harvard and Johns Hopkins. Chronic sleep deprivation has been shown to lead to depression, diabetes, obesity, and cardiovascular disease. We need 8 hours of sleep. I know I like never get 8 hours of sleep. I wish I could get 8 hours of sleep, but I never really do. But one of sleep's biggest problems? Temperature. It's tough to get a good sleep if you're too hot or cold. So I want to tell you about the Pod by 8 Sleep. The Pod by 8 Sleep is a high-tech bed designed specifically to help you achieve optimal sleep fitness. It was developed by leading sleep researchers after tracking 43 million hours of sleep. It combines dynamic temperature regulation and sleep tracking to enhance your rest and recovery. It learns your sleep habits and adjusts the temperature automatically. And that means if you like the bed cool and your partner likes the bed warm, now you can have both at the same time in a crazy comfortable bed. So sleep longer and deeper so you wake up refreshed and ready to take on the world. To celebrate Independence Day, get a free gravity cooling blanket plus free shipping with your Pod purchase. It's a $300 value for free. This offer ends Monday, July 8th. So please visit 8sleep.com/bluewire. That's 8sleep.com/bluewire. EIGHTsleep.com/bluewire. All right, and we're back. So we've talked about the main guys they've signed. The Bulls actually did also sign a two-way player. A French guy. I can't remember what his name off the top of my head is. Let me pull it up here. Do you remember his name off the top of your head?
I'd have to look it up as well.
I'd have to look it up as well. Like I said, just a two-way player. They needed a new one. Adam Mokoka, 6'5" shooting guard out of France. I don't know too much about him. I think sounds like he's pretty athletic, defensive-minded player, but a terrible offensive player. We'll have to look into that guy a bit more at some point. But let's talk about just the rest of the roster in general now, what the rest of the free agency might look like. I believe they are now at 15 roster spots. So basically that's the full roster, but there have been rumors about Chris Dunn possibly being on the move again bringing in Satoransky, bringing back Archie Diacono. That leaves them with, they got Satoransky, they got Kobe White, they got Chris Dunn, and they got Ryan Archie Diacono. I feel like something's got to give there. I know Jake Fisher of Sports Illustrated reported yesterday that the Bulls are looking to trade Dunn, or have been trying to find a trade. We've heard that his name was in rumors going back to the deadline and all that stuff and earlier in the season. I mean, you have to think Chris Dunn is a goner now at this point, right?
Yeah, I think the decision to bring back Archie Diacono sort of indicates that Dunn's going to be gone, like you said. They got Satoransky, they got Kobe White, they got Archie Diacono. So I think Dunn is probably the odd man out. They really need a wing because they only have two true small forwards now with Otto and with Chandler Hutchison. Dude, Otto is the best player on the Bulls. I just want to make sure that everyone's clear on that. He's also the most indispensable. I think that if he goes down this year, like the whole season goes down with him, really. He is a huge piece for this year. Because they're thin on the wing, and honestly, I think he's their best player. He also is a player option, Otto Porter does. After this year, it's for like $26 million, but he's only going to be 26 or 27 years old. So he might want to, you know, opt out and sign a long-term deal. Otto Porter is going to be a really fascinating guy this year. But the Bulls do need a third small forward, I think. I'm not really sure at the names who could be out there. But, you know, I would like to see them move Dunn, try to get a small forward back.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. And they could have options. I mean, they could try to move Dunn just into somebody's cap space. I know there's not that much cap space out there anymore, but I don't know if another team has a trade exception or whatever teams do have cap space. If you can even get a second-round pick or maybe a couple second-round picks, his value is probably not very high. But at this – like, I don't want to trade him just to trade him, but, like, if you can trade him and – maybe open up cap space and sign a decent player, or if they're going to have that room exception still, just to clear a roster spot. Something that I had mentioned earlier on Twitter today, this was before they had the agreement from Cornette, because I'm not totally sure what his contract status is, but I was thinking about, I feel like they need to waive Blakeney. I just don't think there's any point for him on the roster either at this point. He's basically another combo guard. He's like a mix of a point guard and a shooting guard, but he's not a point guard at all, because all he does is chuck shots. I just really don't think that there's really any place for him on the roster. He's got a guaranteed, basically minimum contract. So I'd either a couple options here. You could just waive him and use him to maybe find a wing. I was considering waiving him and just guaranteeing Shaq Harrison's contract. I know that'd be basically another point guard, but I don't even think Shaq Harrison's really a point guard either. He's kind of like a two, almost even a three in a point guard's body, just because he's a hounding defender. He could at least help with perimeter defense. He'd be basically just another emergency depth guy, kind of like Arch is. So I was considering maybe just guaranteeing his contract and having him take Blakeney's spot. And then if you move Dunn, then you use that last roster spot to get a wing. I don't even know if they could do that. I don't even know if they'd be able to move Dunn, because I think if they move Dunn, then they have to bring somebody else in to – actually, no, they would be able to do that. You move Dunn, you get another wing, and then if you maybe dump Blakeney and put Harrison instead, I think that would work. That was something that I was considering. You don't have to keep Shaq Harrison at this point. He's certainly a replaceable guy. I definitely agree with you. They do need some help on the wing. Because if you look at their depth chart, like Casey was tweeting out their depth chart, and it's basically like their backup, I think, two was listed as like, I guess they just have a bunch of combo guards. They could really use another wing, like you mentioned. It's basically Chandler Hudson at three, and he's mostly unproven at this point. Bringing a veteran in, like, I don't know if they'll try to bring back Wayne Selden or if they could do better than that. I have not looked at who is like left on the board. Guys like Jeff Green and Jared Dudley are more power forwards, I guess, at this point, who I guess would be like Otto Porter backups, if you would. But like I said, they're off the board now. What do you think about waving Blakeney? I think we talked about this briefly last time. Waving Blakeney, maybe keeping Shaq Harrison, or you think that, but maybe just both those guys gone and figure out something to do with Chris Dunn and bring maybe another guy or two in.
Yeah, wave Blakeney. I'm done with Shaq Harrison too, just because while he's a good wing defender, and I'm sure he endeared himself to Boylan a bit last year, like, they just have too many small guards. So get one more small forward, and they should be good to go.
Let me see if I can. Let me pull up a small forward list here. There's just so much action free agency right from the start. It was absolutely fucking crazy. Just like right, we're waiting on Kawhi still at this point. But like besides that, hey, they could bring a Jabari Parker back. Let's see, Kelly Oubre is still on the market, but he's probably gonna go back to Phoenix. I feel like the restricted free agent market is just brutal at this point. Like, just nobody ever like throws big offer sheets at teams anymore. It's like he's waiting for a deal. Like, Wilson Chandler's out there, Tabo Cephalo, Rondae Hollis Jefferson, maybe. I don't think he's re-signed yet. Like, one. I feel like he'd be decent. Like, obviously really poor shooter, but if you're looking for a versatile defender, can also probably play some power forward as well. Like him, Tabo, Stanley Johnson, Jake Lehman, Justin Anderson, Corey Brewer. Basically, we're getting into the scraps here. But I feel like Rondae Hollis Jefferson might be a really interesting – he's, I think, only like 24, 23, 24 at this point. I think that'd be a really interesting look. I don't think he has signed yet. So, yeah, somebody like that, they could use just another athletic wing with decent size. Totally agree on that front.
One thing I want to mention here, I have this theory. Now, I have no information on this, but just a theory that I have about this free agent period. It feels to me like Garpacks, like, why did Garpacks make such shrewd moves at the start of free agency that totally go against the way they've operated over the, you know, entirety of this last decade? I think that Paxson and Foreman are probably allowing some other voices to enter the room. If you go back to the start of last season, I tweeted out an article today that Casey Johnson wrote at the Tribune. The Bulls basically remodeled their front office. They gave promotions to a few different people, one of them being Brian Hagan, who I believe that his title is assistant general manager, and also Steve Weinman. So I feel like allowing some new voices in the room, if that is what the Bulls did during this free agency period, was really, really beneficial. Like, you never see the Bulls make sharp moves like this to improve around the margins. And in free agency so far, they've absolutely done it. So if everyone's like sitting here being like, how the hell did the Bulls, like, you know, how the hell did Garpax actually make some good moves in free agency this year when, you know, the Bulls' entire history is blowing it in free agency? I want to think that it's because some new voices are in the room, and not just Doug Collins, not just Jim Paxson, but actually some analytic-leaning thinking, because those are the types of moves they made in free agency this year that hasn't been their MO in the past. I think you can include the Otto Porter deal in that as well. I know that Paxson wanted to offer Bobby Portis an extension. Man, I'd much rather have Thaddeus Young than Bobby Portis. Thaddeus Young is the type of guy who improves everyone around him and who helps you win. Bobby Portis is just up there, you know, chucking shots and putting up empty numbers. So the Bulls got really lucky when Portis declined their extension offer. It was tough for Portis because I think he essentially just signed a one-year deal with the Knicks, with a club option on the second year of that deal. So, some smart moves by the Bulls, in my opinion. Some new people are getting their voice heard.
Yeah, that might very well be the case. Let's hope so, because it's definitely the arrow is pointing in the right direction with these moves. So let's finish up here just with some talk about just the big picture of the roster. You wrote a column at Bloggable the other day after the Young and Satoransky agreements were reported, just how the Bulls have had a really nice offseason with these moves now that they've made a couple of their decent moves as well. So basically the question at the end, you brought this up earlier as well, is basically, can the Bulls make the playoffs? We've kind of talked about in this pod a lot that they're still so far away, that they're not close at all. But I mean, we were talking about, I mean, those win projections from Jacob Goldstein at about 39 wins, which is basically right around there. I mean, that's still a huge improvement. I still would not predict them as a playoff team right now. I'm not comfortable going that far. Could I see it happening? Absolutely. Do I predict it's going to happen? No, I still think they'll probably end maybe mid to high 30s, which again, that will have them right there. You usually need around 40, 41, 42 wins to get in. So they should basically be right in the mix. And something that you said that I kind of just liked is that to basically finish off this column is that the Bulls have gone from terrible to possibly respectable. I think, and that they deserve some measured praise. And I just kind of like that. I think that they should be respectable. As long as they stay reasonably healthy. Again, like if a lot of guys get healthy or get injured again, like maybe everything goes in the tank somewhere. But if they say even just reasonably healthy, they should take a step forward. The pieces that they've added should make them better, should add a few wins. So like if the young core takes reasonable steps forward, you have reasonable health, I think they could get into the mid to high 30s. I've had fans obviously telling me they could win 45 games in the mid 40s. I mean, I think you got to really slow your roll on that. I know. I think they did that back in like the Baby Bulls days. They went from absolutely awful to like a 4 seed. I'm pretty sure in like one season. So like it has, I believe, happened before. I feel like that's not really realistic to expect. If fans want to have those expectations, I'm not going to stop them. I'm not going to have those expectations myself. But I do have the expectations that they should be significantly better. That they should not be a fucking laughing stock like they basically have been these last 2 years, and they should put forward at least an entertaining, respectable product on the basketball court in 2019-20.
Yeah, totally. So let's go through this playoff thing, because I think it's definitely possible. In my opinion, there's 6 teams in the Eastern Conference that are definitely in. The Bucks, the Raptors, even if they lose Kawhi, the Raptors are a playoff team. The Sixers, the Celtics, the Pacers, and the Nets. So I'm giving those 6 definitely in. And then in my opinion, there's going to be 4 teams fighting for 2 spots. You got the Magic, who made the playoffs last year, the Pistons. You got the Heat and the Bulls. So I think that that's the position the Bulls are going to be in this year, battling with those 4 teams for 2 spots in the Eastern Conference. Now, the Pistons are a pretty good team around Blake Griffin, around Andre Drummond. The Heat
And D Rose.
D Rose now, right? It's going to be D Rose versus the Bulls in some late season games fighting for a playoff spot. That could be fun. You know, the Heat have Jimmy now. They kind of got a weird team around him. Justice Winslow, they keep Drogic, actually. They move on from Whiteside, but they do have Bam Adebayo. That's a pretty interesting team. The Magic, I kind of don't believe in this year, but they have Markel Fultz. They're hoping for that rehabilitation tour. They still got Jonathan Isaac, Aaron Gordon. So I think the Bulls can get the 8 seed. I'm going to go Heat 7, Bulls 8 right now. Coming into the year, which, man, I never thought I would say that. I really thought 35 wins was like the absolute ceiling for this team. And now I think 35 wins is the absolute floor. They're going to have to stay healthy. They need Lauri Markkanen to make a jump. They need Carter to stay healthy and to improve on his rookie season. Carter's only going to be 20 years old the entire year. He was one of the youngest players in that draft class. But I think that Carter's good enough to make, you know, a winning type of impact in his second year. I really love the free agent signings. Markkanen, to me, is the guy who enters the year with the most pressure because, you know, for all the talk, I think, of him being the Bulls' brightest young piece, he kind of profiles as a one-dimensional scorer right now. He really needs to diversify his game, mostly as a playmaker, and then if he can make any sort of impact on defense. But right now, he's sort of a one-dimensional scorer, but this is a make-or-break year for Markkanen. Someone on my Bloggable piece commented that when the Bulls moved up to get him with the Jimmy Butler trade, took him at 7, but they included their own 16th pick. Two players were still on the board at that point, Jared Allen and John Collins, two big men. Are we really sure Lauri Markkanen's better than both those guys? I want to believe he is because I like Markkanen's game. He was still able to score at a 55% true shooting percentage, which is like average, solid, respectable. But that was with him only hitting 36% of his three. So I think if he improves as a three-point shooter, you could see the rest of his scoring efficiency go way up. If he can just improve a little bit as a passer, which LaVine did last season, he got his career high in assist rate last year up to 22%. I think the Bulls could really make a major jump up the standings. Markkanen is the guy with the most pressure on him right now because I feel like he could go either way. He could be a one-dimensional guy who doesn't make a big impact on winning, or, you know, maybe he does become a perennial 20-point-per-game scorer who can also contribute in some other areas.
Yeah, good point, sir. I guess I think they should be able to be a good offensive team. I also thought that last year they were going to be good offensively. They would be fun, but they would be bad. They ended up just being fucking awful and not even fun bad. They were just absolutely terrible. I would hope with the pieces that they do have, they should be at least a competent offensive team, maybe even one of the a top half offensive team in the league. We saw them go off in February. They were, I believe, it was either the best or like the second or third best offensive rating in the NBA in February. But in that month, they were also terrible defensively. So I think they're going to be good offensively. I think what the strides they make defensively, I think, could determine if they're actually going to make the playoffs or not. That's where we hope that these free agent signings are hopefully going to make a huge part, where a guy like Thad Young will help. Satoransky isn't like a defensive stopper or anything, but I think he's just a solid team defender. He's not going to be an absolute sieve out there. Luke Kornet, I mean, whatever. I mean, Art's a solid defender. But basically, I think Thad Young will be a huge help there. And then Wendell Carter Jr., I think him developing on the defensive end as that defensive anchor, I think is going to be really important to make this team go from one of the worst defensive teams in the league to even if they're they don't even have to be good defensively. If they're going to be as good offensively as I think that they possibly can be, if they can even just be top 20 in the league and just not absolutely atrocious, that might be enough to get them into an 8 seed and possibly into the playoffs. So I think how they develop defensively, I think, could determine just how good they can be, because I do think they're probably going to be pretty good offensively, unless, again, there's just a ton of injuries.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. They definitely put themselves now to try to follow in the position of what the Nets did, in my opinion, which is to build a good young team for 2 years and then go sign your superstar in 2021 free agency. I tweeted a few names who are going to be available in 2021. Giannis is the big guy. You'll also have Victor Oladipo, Bradley Beal, Paul George, who will be 31, Anthony Davis, you think he's probably off now. And then the 2017 class, like Jason Tatum and those guys, will be restricted free agency year. So I think the Bulls definitely still need a star. And really, this should have been the easy part, just getting back to respectable. They're either going to need one of the guys on the team currently to take a major jump to start giving you star-level production, be it Markkanen, Carter, or Kobe White, potentially, or Zach. So that's the other thing they need. And then it's like, how do you acquire a star from the outside? Because they still need to do that. And they're not actually going to be looking good until they really acquire a star. So the next 2 years, to me, are all about, you know, make the playoffs, be an emerging young team. Hopefully Kobe shows something. Hopefully Markkanen gets better. Hopefully Carter's as good as I think he can be. And then, you know, you try to sign your star in 2021. And the last thing I want to say about this, you know, bit about chasing the playoffs this year, I don't think that we should be scared to say it. Like, the Bulls themselves should embrace this as their goal for the year, because it's obvious with their free agent signings that, you know, they're not trying to acquire, you know, the number one pick next year. Like, they're not trying to tank. They're not trying to acquire a superstar through the draft. Now they're trying to acquire a superstar.
Oh, yeah, they're trying to win.
Through a trade or through free agency. So because you've, you know, taken away the draft route because you've built too good of a team for that, I think that the Bulls should embrace the goal of trying to be a playoff team. And then if they fail, I think it's a huge indictment on Jim Boylan, because Boylan did seem to build up a little bit of goodwill at the end of last season. We know the Bulls front office loves him, with Paxson and Foreman especially. So I think the pressure's on Jim Boylan this year. Like, prove it, dude. We gave you this golden opportunity. You're the head coach of an NBA team after grinding your whole life to get to this point. I want to see Boylan be an actual good NBA coach to make me eat my words when I said he should never coach an NBA game again and actually get this team to the playoffs. It should be a challenge for the Bulls. They shouldn't be scared of it. And yeah, you know, you don't get a Grant Park parade for being the eighth seed in the East, but it would be a pretty big improvement to the Bulls after only winning 22 games last year.
And to a point about that, I feel like a lot of people, I feel like most of the people I've seen, I follow, like, a lot of the Bulls analysts, have really let, and just national analysts have, I feel, have said nice things about the Bulls offseason. I feel a lot of general fans might be kind of like, oh, these moves suck. Like, these are nobodies. Like, they're not help. Like, where are the Bulls actually going with this? Like, what's going on? This rebuild's not going anywhere. And I feel like I guess I don't really know. I mean, I do think Matt, your friendly Bulls blogger, did write a thing about, like, how it's ridiculous that the Bulls weren't in play at all for, like, the star free agents. I think that's absolutely true. It's kind of pathetic that the Bulls in this market with a decent young core weren't even, like, even were basically just a total afterthought with any of these star players. That aside, looking at it realistically, the Bulls have really done as best as you can expect. So I don't, anyone like complaining about, I feel like, these free agent moves, like, I think that's kind of ridiculous. Like, they've added guys that will clearly add wins to the team, clearly make them better. Like, they're not splashy moves, but at this point, like, the Bulls have to be mediocre before they can be really good. Like, there was nothing the Bulls were going to do this offseason that was going to take them from 22 wins to a great team, like, unless they signed whatever. And there was no way that was going to happen. Kevin Durant's hurt. Kyrie Irving probably wouldn't drag this team to, I mean, he'd probably drag them to mediocrity. This team has to be mediocre before they can be good. So we can't really, I don't want to worry about, like, well, like, if they're at the 8th or 7th seed, like, that's the best they're going to be. Well, no, like, what we're hoping basically is, like, the young guys that they do have will develop, that the veterans they brought in will help them raise the profile a bit to a mediocre team, that the young guys will end up either pushing them forward or they're used in trade as trade assets to get one of those stars, like you mentioned. So, like, the worrying about, like, the Bulls, like, and their ceiling right now, like, I feel like if they're a mediocre team next year, that is a huge improvement, because they were so fucking bad the last couple of seasons. So, like, it would be great if they won like 39-40 games, so if they finish as the 9th seed, like, that's a great step. And then, if hopefully they would take even the next step in 2020. So I feel like this offseason, like, I don't know if, like, home run is the right word, because they didn't make any, like, splashy moves, but they've done a really, really good job. And if the Bulls are mediocre next year, that's honestly probably really, really good still.
Yeah, best case scenario for the Bulls, get the Bucks in a first round playoff matchup. Try to show Giannis that you got an emerging team with some
there shooting. You go.
Because Giannis is going to be the big guy in the 2021 free agent class. I have no faith in the Bulls being able to actually reel in that star, but it is nice to see them make some winning moves on the margins. And we've had a couple of people ask us about Bradley Beal. That'd be a good
one. I was actually going to bring him up.
We've already been able to rip off the Wizards twice, so why stop now? And yeah, man, I think, you know, I'm actually excited about next year now. It's going to be a fun team, because I think with Satoransky, with Thad Young, even with someone like Cornett and Archidiakono, you have some veterans in place who can help the core move forward and not get their face beat in. And, you know, in a scenario where they missed the playoffs, the Lakers, I think, were 12th in the lottery standings this year and jumped up to 4th. So because of the new lottery reform, like, you're not as incentivized to be a super bad team. I think that, you know, the NBA accomplished what it sought out to when it made that lottery reform. And now here are the Bulls. You know, they're not trying to find a superstar through the draft anymore. They're going to try to get one another way. So I'm into it. I think, you know, I suddenly have some more faith in the front office moving forward, because in my opinion, these were not John Paxson signings. These were, you know, someone else who was advising these free agent signings. So, but, you know, credit to Paxson for empowering those people, if that actually is what happened. So I'm really happy with this offseason, and I can't believe I'm saying it, but I'm kind of excited for the Bulls next year.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about getting another star, and you mentioned Bradley Beal. I think the Bulls are, like, in a decent spot for that next star, a couple stars, if the disgruntled guys who want to hit the market. Again, the Wizards are a joke. I feel like they've told Beal they're not going to trade him, but I feel like he's going to be out pretty soon. So I feel like the Bulls, whether it's him, whatever next star is out there, they have some nice young pieces. Now they have another, I think Satoransky is a guy you could possibly also throw in for a trade for a star. Could be a valuable, like, second or third piece for a trade. Like, they have some nice pieces there where if they want to go out and make that big splashy blockbuster trade for a star, if he comes available, I think they're in a pretty decent position to do it. So they don't really, like I said, they don't really have to necessarily have to worry about tanking at this point. Like, the free agent thing has never really worked out. Like you said, I would be surprised in 2021 if they signed like a superstar guy. I mean, maybe they could. I don't know. We'd never know. But I think they're in decent position to get a star via trade if it comes to that. So yeah, I think I totally agree with you. I went into last season thinking that I was going to really enjoy the Bulls season. It obviously turned into absolute disaster. But now after this, a solid offseason with some of these nice young pieces and with the guys that they signed, these veterans, yeah, I think there is reason to be excited about the Bulls next year. And it's actually, and hopefully it actually turns out to be exciting and not like the kick in the nuts that the 2018-2019 season was.
All right, I think that about wraps it up.
I think so. Once again, as always, shout out to Blue Wire Pods. Go check out all the great pods across the Blue Wire Network. We're doing a lot of exciting stuff over there, a lot of different stuff. We're keep adding pods by the day. Please go rate and review us. You can listen to us all over the place. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all those fun places. For Blue Wire Pods, you can follow us on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. So this has been Cash Considerations. We'll see. We're still waiting on Kawhi Leonard. Once he signs, that's basically about it for free agency. The Bulls are basically done. Maybe Chris Dunn trade, maybe another signer or two, but the Bulls, pretty nice free agency. We'll see if anything else happens here. So this has been Cash Considerations, Chicago Bulls podcast. Jason and Ricky, have a good night, guys.